Om sahana vavatu sahano bhunaktu sah vidyan karavavahai tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. Good. Welcome back. Welcome also to many students watching, attending, I should say, these classes online. We continue with our study of chapter 23. These chapters, as you know, are not titled. If this one were titled, it would definitely be called Jnanam, spiritual wisdom. And we're seeing just a tremendous amount of really solid Vedantic teachings in this chapter 23. In our prior class, we actually spent some time talking about one of the common misconceptions about Advaita Vedanta. And not just misconceptions, but I have to say, I feel a little bit bad when Vedanta is wrong, Advaita Vedanta is wrongly criticized by other Hindu traditions as being Mayavada, as being, it says the world is an illusion. Both of these statements are really quite wrong. Vedanta, it cannot correctly be called Mayavadi teaching, because does Brahman say everything is Maya, or does Vedanta say everything is Maya, or does Vedanta say everything is Brahman? So then why call it Mayavada? Shouldn't we call it Brahmavada? Okay, observation one. Observation two, Vedanta says the world is just an illusion. And by the way, if that were true, I would join in the criticism. Because if we treat the world as less real than it is, then it's like we're not dealing with the reality of the human condition and the planet Earth and all of the social problems that we see around us. We'll just ignore all of that. After all, it's all an illusion. The wars taking place around the world are just illusion. The degradation of the ecology of this planet is just an illusion. So therefore, who cares? Koi bat nahi. It's no issue whatsoever. So this is a completely wrong perspective. And I would, if Vedanta truly taught that the world is an illusion, I would join that criticism for the reason I just gave. It's not, Vedanta does not teach an illusion. This is a very common misunderstanding of Vedanta's teaching of mithya. Mithya does not mean unreal. Mithya does not mean an illusion. Mithya describes a relationship between pot and clay. That's all. In the metaphor, the clay is satyam, the pot is mithya. Is this pot in my hand unreal? Not. Is it as unreal as the elephant in my other hand? There's a big difference. If there were an elephant in my hand, I couldn't hold it. I can easily hold this pot, though. You get the point. So to call this pot unreal would be wrong. Is this pot an illusion? Come on. Just allow me a bad joke. If I take this pot and hurl it at your head and it hits you, will you say that's an illusion? You get the point. So these ideas are just misguided. And I think it's because Vedanta's teachings are fairly subtle and they get misunderstood. And that I understand how Vedantic teachings get misunderstood. So mithya then defines a particular relationship between namarupa, name and form, and adhishtana, the underlying substratum, the underlying reality. So just as this pot is namarupa and its adhishtana, its content is clay, in the same way Vedanta teaches that the world is namarupa, the world is mithya, but not unreal, not illusory any more than this pot is an illusion or unreal, but that rather that the world, the word mithya points to an underlying reality, that adhishtana. So the world says, I'm sorry, Vedanta says that the world is an appearance, namarupa, but it exists in a functional way because of its underlying reality, which is Brahman, that adhishtana. So this is important to address, this very common misunderstanding of mithya. And the focus now of Sri Krishna's ongoing discussion, thank you, is the fact that Brahman is indeed the underlying reality. We'll see that in the next verse. I'll remind you, these verses are in that longer meter, so just follow me. Avidyamane pyapabhasate yo, avidyamano pyapabhasate yo, vaikariko rajasa sargahesah, vaikariko rajasa sargahesah, brahma swayam jyotirato vibhati, brahma swayam jyotirato vibhati, brahmendriyartatma vikara chitram, brahmendriyartatma vikara chitram. Avidyamano, avidyamanaha, breaking the words apart, avidyamanaha appi yaha avabhasate. Yaha, we're talking about the world here. Yaha, the world, which avabhasate, which appears, which we experience. The world that we experience, and we experience this world, avidyamanaha api, even though it doesn't enjoy absolute existence. So we're back to the satyam mithya thing. The world, here's the word here, avabhasate, appears. The pot appears, the world appears. Avidyamanaha api, even though it's not absolutely real, even though the pot is not as real as clay, certainly appears, even though the world is not as real as Brahman, it still appears. Now remember our definition of not real. So we define real in terms of its ability to abide unchanging. That which comes and goes is less real than that which is abiding. The pot comes and goes, the clay remains. The world comes and goes, Brahman remains. Based on this, we say that clay is more real than pot. Based on that, we say that Brahman is more real than the world. It's not that complicated, even though these are some very profound teachings. So this world, which is namarupa, name and form, but name and form that exist because of a sat adhishtana, a real substratum. Suppose this pot were made of this is a traditional example. This pot were made of sky flowers. What are sky flowers? They're all around. Flowers and So obviously, a sky flower is an unreal thing. If this pot were made not of clay, but if this pot were made of sky flowers, could I hold it? Ah, you get it. I can hold this pot, we can see the pot, we can talk about the pot because it exists because of an underlying reality which is more real than the pot. If the underlying reality were not real, a pot made of sky flowers, then it wouldn't appear. It would have no nama-rupa. In the same way, the world in which we live has a real, the word is sad-adhisthana, a real substratum, which is Brahman. The world, on the other hand, is vaikarikaha. It is a modification. It is continually changing. Everything we experience is continually changing. And it is rajasa sargaha eshaha. Eshaha, this world, is rajasa sarga. Sarga here means creation. It's a creation due to rajasa, due to rajas, specifically due to the rajasic nature of maya. We might as well do this today. We get these words so confused. Mithya and maya. And it's pretty easy to get confused if I say to you, maya is mithya, but mithya is not maya. You say, what? But let's take 5 minutes and you'll understand that statement and you really understand a lot of this much better. So Brahman, clay, unless something acts upon the clay, there won't be a pot. So there is a creator involved in the clay appearing in the form of pot. In the same way, there is a creator involved in Brahman appearing as the world. Who is that creator? This is the big issue. Let me go to the board. So you're going to put the board on. We also need the board light on. And then exactly. And the board light, please. Thank you. So, just do you get some terminology right? And I think this looks complicated because a few terms are not properly understood. So, let's try to understand those terms. So, we start with Brahman. Actually, let's give the metaphors. So we start with clay, and then plus some factor equals pot. Clay is in a category we call satyam. This is metaphorically. And pot is in a category we call mithya. All right. So clay plus what equals pot? There has to be a creative power, a creative faculty. Let's just say creator. Whether it's a person or a machine, there is some creative principle. So here, Brahman plus something becomes the world. Now, plus what? There has to be a creative factor involved, a creative power. And here is the best definition of maya you'll find. Maya is a creative power. It's a creative power. There are many ways of defining maya, but in Advaita Vedanta, perhaps the best way to name maya, to define maya, is as a creative capacity. Brahman, in the presence of maya, appears as a world. clay, because of the action of a creator, appears as a pot. Brahman, because of the rajasa nature of maya, that's our verse, appears as the world. Of course, maya also has a tamasa nature, which is accounts for the materiality of the world, the physical nature, the solidity of the world, also has a sattvika nature. We say maya is composed of the three gunas. Now, as long as we have this up here, let's deal with the confusion that gets associated here. First confusion is people who say you've just destroyed Advaita, non-duality. And that is, you have one Brahman plus one Maya, that equals two. And this is not, I think you'll agree, this is not the time and place for a long technical discussion, but let me show you how simply Vedanta handles it. Vedanta says, Brahman is Satyam, but let's come back up here. The creator is quite different than clay, right? Completely different. Completely different category. By the way, any metaphor doesn't work perfectly, so we just draw upon a metaphor wherever you can. But the creator has a completely different nature than clay, the potter or whatever it is. In the same way, maya has a completely different nature than Brahman. What is the nature of Brahman? Satyam. What is the nature of maya? Mithya. Maya is mithya. And here's this is for where the words get really confusing. If I say maya is mithya, let's take mithya. Actually, a little bit of grammar is helpful here. Maya is an adjective. By the way, grammarians know that that's wrong. Maya is actually an adverb, and somehow it's been treated as an adjective for thousands of years. Anyway, who cares? So we'll treat it as an adjective, which means different than a noun. Maya is a feminine noun. Maya is a thing. Brahman, accompanied by this creative capacity, which is a noun, Brahman can appear as a world, and then non-duality is rescued, so to speak, by saying that this maya is not as real as Brahman, like the pot is not as real as clay. Maya is not as real as Brahman. And that's what we say. Maya is mithya. Maya is not an independent reality. Maya is also name and form. Gunas are name and form. And like the pot exists because of clay, maya exists because of Brahman. So all we're adding here, Brahman plus name and form. That's like saying clay plus namarupa. Namarupa is not an additional thing. Clay is the thing. And here, that's why. Mithya is an adjective. So we say maya is not as real as Brahman. Maya is not an independent existence. So we don't violate our teachings of Advaita here. And we do so by observing that maya, the status of maya is not satyam. Once again, clay and the creator are completely different. Brahman and maya are completely different. Brahman is satyam, whereas maya is mithya. That's not so bad. You're getting it. So therefore, maya is mithya, maya is not absolutely real. And at this point, we can also make one more observation, another common question that often is answered. What is the relationship between Brahman and Ishvara? Well, the creator, and this is where the metaphor starts to break down. So allow me to do this. Since the metaphor breaks down, let's do that. Now you will understand the next step much better now. When I say that Brahman with the creative capacity called Maya is Ishvara. Ishvara, creator, sustainer, destroyer, is Brahman plus Maya. In fact, my guru was famous for this equation. Brahman plus Maya equals Ishvara. Brahman, in the presence of his creative capacity called Maya, is Ishvara. Of course, that means world. Yeah, Ishvara is manifest in the form of the world. You already know that. So this isn't showing anything surprising, anything that you really didn't know. This is just, let's say, systematizing what you've already understood in a more general way. Now, let's one more step. So Brahman becomes manifest as a world in the presence of Maya. That world is a manifestation of Ishvara. Brahman with Maya is Ishvara. And here's the last step to understand the relationship between Brahman and Maya. Watch. I'm going to take Pujya Swami, Swami Dayanandaji's math a step further. I don't know if you would approve of this or not. We can't ask him anymore. But let's try this. Ishvara minus Maya. How's this for a new equation? Ishvara minus Maya. Can you see where I'm going with this? Specifically, Nirguna Brahman. So Ishvara, in the absence of this Maya, every commentator will say Trigunatmika Maya. Maya is composed of the three gunas. When you take the gunas away from Ishvara, what's left should be Nirguna. Brahman. Or if we take Brahman and take it the other way and add some gunas to it, if we take Brahman and add some gunas to it, it should be saguna. You might know that saguna Brahman is a technical term for Ishvara. That's it. Saguna Brahman, Brahman with gunas, Brahman with the three gunas, Brahman with Maya, is saguna Brahman is Ishvara. So Ishvara with the gunas of Maya is, I'm sorry, Brahman with the gunas of Maya is Ishvara. Ishvara without the gunas of Maya is Nirguna Brahman. I hope this didn't make things more confusing, because I know people get hung up on some of these terms. So anyway, we can try to, I think it's not a big deal, right? It's not a big deal. You get it. All right, so with this in mind, we can return to our text. Okay, where did we leave off? Okay, we'll go to the second half now. Yes, good, thank you. In the second half of the verse, Brahma Swayam Jyotihi. Brahman is self, literally self-shining, self-revealing, self-evident, and it's referring to Brahman as the truth of who you are. We saw in earlier parts of this chapter that Brahman is a reality not just because of which the world exists. Brahman is a reality because of which you exist. The essence of you is consciousness. The essence of the world is Brahman. Guess what? Can you follow this? The essence of you is consciousness. your true nature as a conscious being at a fundamental level. You are consciousness. The underlying reality because of which the world exists, we call Brahman. And then what is the relationship between consciousness and that Brahman? That's what the ancient rishis revealed. Tat tvam asi. Tvam, you, in your essential nature as consciousness, tvam asi, tat asi, you are that Brahman. Or more direct, the Mahavakya from the Rig Veda is more clear. Prajnanam Brahma. Prajnanam means consciousness. How more obvious could a Mahavakya be? Consciousness is Brahman, so the reality because of which you exist, pure consciousness, and the reality because of which the world exists, Brahman, cannot be two realities, one and the same. But these are very different contexts. One is an internal context, and another is an external context. So from the internal context within you, consciousness is self-shining, self-revealing. That consciousness is Brahman. That's why Krishna says here, Brahma Swayam Jyotihi. But ataha, but now we'll say beyond that, further, that same Brahman, Vibhati, appears in various ways outside. So first comes the inner perspective. Brahman is present in you as consciousness. And then comes the outer perspective. Brahman is present in and through the world as its underlying reality. And then in and through the world means what? Excuse me, I'm sorry. Okay. In what forms does Brahman appear in the world? In the forms of Brahma, Indriya, Artha, Atma, and Vikara. Chitram, this whole variety of ways. The first word, Brahma, means Brahmaji, representing all the gods, all the deities. Then comes Indriya, sense organs. Then comes Artha, objects, all the objects of the world. Then comes Atma, which in this context means your body. And finally comes Vikara, that which is a change or that which is changing, referring to mind. So very briefly, he summarizes everything that exists outside. So whatever exists inside exists because of Brahman. Whatever exists outside exists because of Brahman. You exist because of Brahman. The world exists because of Brahman. This much is clear. I'm laughing because that's what he says. This much is clear. Let's see that. Evam. We're still in the long meter. Evam sputam brahma viveka hetu bihi. Evam sputam brahma viveka hetu bihi. Parapavarena visharadena chitvatma sandehamuparameta. Chitvatma sandeha uparametha swananda tushto khila kamukebhyaha. Swananda tushto khila kamukebhyaha. Evam sputam. Thus it is clear. Why is it clear? Because Sri Krishna has made it clear. By the way, if the complicated stuff I've written on the board is not perfectly clear to you, it's okay. It becomes clear in time. On the other hand, if what I wrote up on the board was helpful to you, that's really significant, because this summarizes a lot of the big structure of Vedanta. So Sri Krishna here says, evam sputam, based on all that's been taught so far, this is clear. Why is it clear? Brahma viveka hetu bihi. because of the viveka, the discernment of what is Brahman, by discerning what is Brahman at both levels. Brahman within you as the consciousness, which is your fundamental nature, and Brahman outside as the underlying reality because of which everything exists. And how is that Brahman known? Actually, this is a very subtle point. How do you come to know what is Brahman? There's two steps. Again, we're seeing the big structure of Vedanta, but in a very simple way. I think Krishna is putting it in a very simple way. He says, Brahman is known how. The first step is para apavadena, through negation of everything else. Apavada, negation of para, of that which is other. So there's a difference between you and everything else. This is a division. Every time I use that expression, I apologize. If you've heard this joke before, I apologize. But every time I use that expression, I remember as a young man, this is probably in the early 1980s, hearing Pooja Swamiji for the first time. And he went on talking about Brahman and everything else. Brahman and everything else. Everything. His Tamilian accent was quite strong in those days. I think Malayalis have a similar thing going. Everything. Anyway, took me a while to figure it out. So here is one of the main teaching methodologies of Vedanta, is this discernment of Brahman through apavada, negation of para, of everything else. How do you do that? You are the knower. Anything known to you is not you, part of everything else. So you are the knower. This chair is known to you. I'm not a chair. Let me put it in first person. I'm the knower. The arm of the chair is known to me. Therefore, I am not the chair. I am the knower. This arm is known. This leg is known. This head is known. This whole body is known. Anything known to me is not me. Wouldn't it be silly? I know the chair, therefore I am a chair. Or worse, watch this. This is Vedanta. I know the chair, therefore I am a chair, or in a more subtle way. I know the maroon chair, therefore I am maroon. How's that? But that's exactly what we do. I know the male body, therefore, I am male. I know the old body, therefore, I am old. We do that all the time. And it's just as silly as saying, I am maroon, according to Vedanta. If you get these teachings, the maroonness of the chair belongs to the chair. The age and gender of the body belong to the body. And this goes on. This is... this is the apavada. This is the negation. Anything known to me is not me. So we start with the body, mind, senses, thoughts, emotions. Everything gets negated. What's left? The consciousness of the one doing the negator. Negation, I should say, the consciousness of the negator. And this process, though, Sri Krishna puts in an adjective here, this process has to be visharadena. It has to be done skillfully. You know, it's not just, actually, we'll talk about that later. I'll save that. So it has to be done carefully. The commentator makes it more specific. Probably you'll need the help of a guru. Probably. That's what the commentator says. So through this process of negation, you come to know Brahman present in yourself as consciousness. That's step one. What about Brahman outside? You know inside through this process of negation. How do you know Brahman outside? Through Mahavakya. That's it. This is the big structure of Vedanta. How does Vedanta work? It leads you to understand Brahman within through this process of negation. And then how do you understand Brahman outside? Through the Mahavakya, which helps you understand that the reality because of which the world exists is the same as the reality because of which you exist. Then he continues, Chitva, having removed Atma Sandeham, any confusion about the nature of Atma. Nature of Atma here means nature of your true nature, consciousness. Nature of consciousness, having removed the so-called veil of ignorance, having discovered your true nature as pure consciousness. When we use the word pure, that has a very suggestive word. So pure consciousness means consciousness which has no beginning, no end. Consciousness which is unborn, uncreated, unchanging, eternal. Further, consciousness which can't be affected by anything external, consciousness which remains utterly unscathed by all worldly problems. Also, consciousness which has no edge, no boundary, no limit, which means consciousness which isn't stuck inside your head, consciousness which isn't stuck inside your body, consciousness which is all pervasive. And that makes sense, right? If consciousness were stuck inside your body, then how could that consciousness be Brahman, the underlying reality for the external world? So the reality for which the external world exists and your reality are one and the same. Having made this discovery, Sri Krishna says, Uparameta, one will naturally withdraw from what? Akhila kamukebhyaha. One will naturally withdraw from akhila, all, kamuke, kamuka. Kamuka is an object of desire. You will be freed from all desires when that so-called veil of ignorance covering your true nature is removed. Why? Because your true nature, we call it divine nature. If your true nature is divine, if your true nature is limitless, full, complete, perfect, utterly free from suffering, sorry to be a little flippant, what more could you want? If you've discovered that, what more could you want? And that's what he says here. Sva ananda tushtaha. You will be tushta, absolutely content, fulfilled. Fulfilled by what? Sva ananda. Your own innate fullness, completeness, ananda. So having removed that veil of ignorance, you then when I say lose desire, I'm not saying this. Sri Krishna says, Uparameta, one naturally becomes free from all desires, binding desires. Become, better to say, free from all compulsivity, free from raga dvesha, being free to chase after what you want, being free from the compulsion. To chase after what you want, the compulsion to run away from what you don't want. We've discussed all that before. Now, to introduce the next verse, he gives an example when in the second line he says, para apavada, the negation of what is not you. In the very next verse, he gives an example of that process of negation. Since that process of negation is the first of two steps in gaining enlightenment, liberation. We said, first step is discovering who you are. First step is discovering the essence of your nature, and the second step is discovering the essence of everything else. First step is inside. Second step is outside. So he gives an example of that first step, that process of negation. He gives an example in the next verse. Natma vapu partivam indriyani. Natma vapu partivam indriyani. Asur. Deva hyasur vayur jalam hutashah. Deva hyasur var jalam hutashah. Mano namatram dhishana chatatvam. Mano namatma dhishana chasatvam. Ahankriti kam kshitirartha samyam. Ahankriti kam kshitirartha samyam. So he describes this process of negation. What is it? Na atma. That is not me. Atma, I. My true nature, my true self. Anything you can live without is your essential nature. It's something you possess. You possess a vapu, physical body. Can you live without this physical body? You think, wait a minute, I can't live without this physical body. Well, turns out you do every night in your dreams. You have a pretty complicated life in your dreams, which is completely independent of your body. So independent that if you are, thank goodness you're not, but if you were paraplegic in your waking life, in your dream you can walk and run and talk and do everything. So that's to show that your existence as a conscious being does not depend on your physical body. You have a body, you are not the body. So this body, vapuhu, which is partivam, it's made of earth, it's made of stuff, it's made of physical elements. Na atma, I am not that body. Also, na atma indriyani, I'm not the senses. Anything known to you is not you. Do you know that you have the power of sight? Do you know that you have the power of hearing? You just heard. So, and you see me. And in fact, you know more than that. If you're wearing glasses and you take them off, you know that you're nearsighted or farsighted. So the senses are known to you, like you possess a physical body, which means you could exist without your physical body. You possess your senses, your sense organs. Could you exist if you were blind? Sure. If you were deaf? Yeah. If you lost all... Oh, I like this one. If your body were numb, would you exist? Be a very strange experience. But your existence as a conscious being doesn't depend on these indriyas, on these senses. And he makes a subtle distinction between indriya, the sense organs, and the deva. Deva here refers to the, technically, the presiding deities, the adhishtana devatas, which is how the ancients understood the function of the eyes and ears. So in modern times, we know a lot about how the eyes and ears work. By the way, pretty complicated, right? If you studied how that semicircular canal with all these hairs wiggling in the fluid, you hear because of that. You have all these so-called rods and cones on the back of your eyeball and a lens on the front focusing it, and somehow you see me because it's complicated stuff. Did the ancient rishis understand any of that? Of course not. So they knew it was something special. It was something extraordinary. So for the ancient rishis, they thought there was some kind of deity that blessed you, a deity whose presence in your eyes blessed you with sight, a deity whose presence in your ears blessed you with the power of hearing. That's what deva means here. So you are aware of both. You know not only that you have eyeballs, you know that you can see. You know not only that you have ears, you know that you can hear. Therefore, your existence as a conscious being is independent of the senses. He, and indeed you are different than asuhu. Asu means breath and refers here to the panchaprana, the life force that enlivens your body. And we can talk about it in a fivefold way, but we needn't get into the details here. You are life force, you know, that can be very, very abstract. Let's make it more concrete. How do you know you're breathing right now? You know you're breathing. Good thing. Better yet, do you know right now if you're tired? By the way, for most people, that's most of the time. Seems to be like a virus of being tired. And everyone is tired, and for good reasons. But the point I'm making is the prana in the form of breath is known to you. Prana in the form of your energy or lack thereof is known to you. Therefore, your existence as a conscious being is independent of prana. Also, now we get some details here. Actually, skip ahead. Skip to the next line, then we'll back up. So the next line talks about then faculties of our brain. First is manas, mind. Do you know what you're thinking right now? How about that? Whatever is present in your mind is known to you. Therefore, as a conscious being, you're separate from that. You have thoughts. You're not your thoughts. You have a mind. You are not your mind. And then a distinction here is made between manas and buddhi. Here the word dhishana is a synonym for buddhi. So you have a mind, this general function of your mind, also buddhi. Faculty of discernment. Do you possess a decision-making power? Now, this is a really funny example. See if you like this. I'm going to test to see whether or not you can decide. So this is a test to see whether or not you have a buddhi. I'm going to test you. And here's the test. Get up and leave. Get up and leave. None of you got up and left. Which means you decided not to follow my instruction. This is evidence that you indeed have a buddhi. Good news. Okay. Just having fun. Okay. Then, you also have sattvam. Sattva can be a general term for mind. The commentator says it means chitta, memory. So you know your memories. That means you're independent of your memories. If you forget something, how does that affect you? The owner of the memories. Okay, not at all. And finally, in the next line, ahankritihi, ahankara, the ego. This is a typical fourfold breakdown of mental functions. So we have the manas, buddhi, chitta, and ahankara. It is one of several ways of dividing up all mental faculties. So you are not the physical body. You are not the so-called subtle body, the prana and the sense organs, and you are not all of your mental faculties. This is that apavada, that process of negation that Sri Krishna was talking about in a prior verse. And now the last part of details is that all of these things, body is made of physical elements. The subtle body, which includes prana, indriya and all the mental faculties, in according to the ancient worldview, is made of subtle elements. Whichever it is, there are elements. And you are, what is your relationship to the elements? Your body is full of elements, like what, calcium? I don't know what, I think my body is, main element is called fat. Anyway, I don't think fat is an element, but you get the point. Okay. Here, the elements are also indicated in this verse in a little bit of an obscure way. At middle of the second line, you see deva, hi, asuhu, that we saw. Asu means breath. Now you see vayur, vayu, air. Then you see jalam, water. Then you see hutasha. The one who does the asha, eating, of huta, what you offer into a sacrificial fire. Hutasha is an obscure word for fire. So you got three of four elements, and then go down to the last line. We can include kam, space, and finally kshatihi, a word for earth. And finally it says na, atma. You are none of these. All of these are artasamyam. They all have something in common. They're all made of elements, which is why he says, in one word we skipped over in the third line, annamatram. Here, anna doesn't necessarily mean food. It means stuff, elements. So you are made of elements. You are made of stuff. You are the knower of stuff. Therefore, you are separate from stuff. Through this process of negation, you can discern. Sri Krishna said you discern Brahman through this process of negation. How? This is neti neti from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Negate, negate, negate. Sri Krishna didn't say neti. He used the term apavada, para. Apavada, negation of what is not you. If you go on negating, negating, negating until there's nothing left to negate, what's left? You. Everything that's not you has been negated. Your view is outside, towards your body and the world beyond it. Once everything else has been negated, you and you alone remain. One more observation here. Remember he said that this has to be done, he used the word visharadena, skillfully. This has to be done skillfully. Philosophers might look at this and question its validity. And a philosopher would say, how can you discover a truth through a process of negation? And this is a philosophical argument. And they would use an argument like this. Please try to define an elephant through a process of negation. Get started, okay? So an elephant is not a rock. An elephant is not a tree. An elephant is not a house. An elephant is not a blade of grass. Tell me, are we getting close yet? When will we get close? You get the point that this process of negation is not very useful in describing an elephant. And so from a philosopher would maybe find fault with that attempt to discover a truth merely through negation. Why do we use it? And here's the trick. In fact, this is going to be described in the next verse. I think it's a little late to get into the next verse. But here's the point. Suppose what you suppose that which you want is already here now inside you as your true nature. To put it in another way, what you seek is present here and now in your experience. I think this is a very powerful observation if you get it. What you seek is present in your experience right now. What does that mean? We said the truth of who you are is consciousness. Are you not conscious of this experience? Is this experience not a conscious experience? Is there such a thing as an unconscious experience? I don't think so. But this experience takes place in consciousness. We are all conscious right now. That consciousness is 100% present in our experience, but we don't recognize it for what it truly is. Why? We are so confused by superimposing, to go back to what I started with before, I am maroon. I am male. I am female. Wait a minute. Is consciousness maroon? Is consciousness male? Female? Old? Young? Tired? My consciousness is so tired. No. If you say that, but Swamiji, my consciousness is so tired. All I have to do is ask you, how do you know that? There you go. All of these attributes we use to define ourselves are part of that veil of ignorance. When you say, I am, I'll stay in first person, when I say I am male, that maleness is part of the veil of ignorance. If I say I'm old, part of the veil of ignorance. If I say I'm tired, part of the veil of ignorance. By the way, when you say I am, and then there's a blank, how many words could you put in that blank? Thousands. Thousands and thousands of attributes that make up your self-identity. All of those collectively form that so-called veil of ignorance. And how does this neti-neti work? What Sri Krishna called para, apavada, the negation of what you're not. We just whack away at it one at a time. I'm not the body. And that's what he does in this verse. Na atma vapuhu. I'm not this physical body, which is partivaha, which is made of elements. I'm not the senses, I'm not male, I'm not female, I'm not old, I'm not young. Through this process of negation, eventually what's left is you in your fundamental nature as consciousness without any attributes whatsoever. What does that mean? Consciousness without attributes. Very simply, consciousness without problems. Consciousness without headaches. Consciousness without tax forms to fill out. Consciousness without bills to pay. Consciousness without... this is a little... I don't know, you can get really mean here. I don't think I'll stop myself before we'll stay. How about consciousness without angry bosses, consciousness without obnoxious neighbors? You get the point. So consciousness, you negate all the attributes, means you're negating the taxes, the bills, the obnoxious neighbor, and the angry boss. That all gets negated. What's left? You minus suffering. Consciousness completely freed from suffering. And that's enlightenment, which Sri Krishna is going to talk about in the very next verse. We'll save that for next week. A couple of quick announcements. Tomorrow, our Vedanta class meets at 10 o'clock, and our satsang follows at 11 o'clock. Remember daylight savings time thing? So if you don't set your clock, I don't know which it is. You'll either be an hour early or an hour late. Either way, it's not good. So check your clock tomorrow. We'll conclude with our prayers. Just like the Arati Dia. Yeah, I like this one. Easier. Right? Thank you. Good. Om Gananahan Twa Ganapatigam Avamai Gavingavinam Upamashravastamam Jeshta Rajam Brahmanam Brahmanas Patahana Shrinvan Utubasira Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishwaro Guru Radmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanura Mardanam Devaki Paramhanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Amritangamaya Om Shanti 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 Om Tat Sat.